Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. We'll be talking about gardening today.
Well, we better be talking about gardening because the stuff we're going to be talking about is going to break that window over there.
We won't be talking about gardening today. And as you can hear, Mike Cosentino is in the studio, and silent Gary LeMaster is going to be talking his head off this morning.
You've done some great research.
All right. The Democratic and the Republican conventions are over. Gary and I had a kind of debate about the importance of platforms that the parties put into, because most of them, they don't get put into effect. But today we want to talk about the Democratic platform as a way of looking of where we should go as a country with the many problems, the low wages, the stagnation, and so forth.
And that's crucial, Steve. Let's dwell on that for a second. You got two-party platforms. As you said, in the past, they were just perfunctory things that nobody paid any attention to. But for some reason, this cycle, they mean a lot more. And you only have two parties. And so their platforms are important.
And they're diametrically opposed, right?
What they propose that they stand for, what they propose to want to do, what they propose to want, the direction they want to lead the country, if they are successful in getting their people in office, is important. And so that's why we're going to talk about platforms. And what you just said, say it again, they are diametrically opposed.
Diametrically opposed. Gary, you have a list of, why don't you list out, you know, at least a half dozen of, is that too much? I mean,
it could go on, but
pick a few of them anyway.
I was just going to say, my point with the platforms is that most people never read them, but they are really kind of a guideline for what each of the parties want to do.
And they're so boring, folks.
They are. They're like 70, 80 pages each, but these were written largely by the delegates that represent the candidates. So what's in the platform kind of matters because that's what they're going to try to implement. Yeah.
And that's the other important thing. These things are sourced. They may be guided and certainly by politicians, but they're sourced by people, by delegates.
Okay, so the story is that the Democratic platform is the most progressive platform Democrats have ever had.
I wouldn't say that.
I'm saying that's what the press said. It's the most progressive platform that Democrats have had, and that Bernie Sanders and his supporters had a big influence in issues like, instead of, we spent so many years trying to save Social Security, make our little contribution to saving Social Security here, but the platform wants to expand Social Security.
And I'll tell you why.
Well, let's let Gary do his list, and then you can tell us why, Mike.
I would take issue with it being the most liberal, socialist platform ever. It's pretty much the usual things, a lot of platitudes in both platforms. The things that they're calling progressive and outrageous are things like raising the minimum wage, calling for it to be raised nationally to $15 an hour so people can actually have a living wage. If they work, full time, they can actually live off of the money they make.
Especially if you had two incomes at that.
Right.
And
it calls for changes. It doesn't specify, but it calls for changes to make college more affordable. Gee, that's a liberal idea.
Doesn't the platform say that insofar as possible, and there's some little bit of wiggle room there, that public colleges for people whose family make under $125,000 a year should be free. That's what the Democratic platform
says. As free as possible. It's sort of like the Arizona Constitution that calls for education to be as free as possible. The Democratic platform calls for equal pay for women for equal work. Gee, that's an outrageous idea. And it calls for further reforms of Wall Street, while the Republican platform calls for dismantling Dodd-Frank and the Consumer Protection Bureau. The Democrats call for breaking up the big banks or reforming them as much as possible. This could be considered liberal. It calls for tax increases on the richest Americans.
Yeah. Well, when it calls for a financial transaction tax, when it calls for what the National Nurses Network, one of the not, if not largest, strongest unions in the country, when it calls for an FTT, a financial transaction tax, I'm not crazy about the term Robin Hood tax, but you'll see that thrown around the internet.
And also,
then it's starting to become liberal.
Well, and the reason, you know, in case you're not really familiar with the transaction tax, is that we have Wall Street investors or companies that are doing what they call micro trades, which you know, it's trades by the you know, literally the hundreds of thousands per day.
Yeah, most trading now is done that way, I believe.
In the shorter your length, the closer you are to Wall Street, to the markets, it gets into microseconds, and so they can actually follow trends and react to them, you know, within, you know, a microsecond. So it really kind of negates the ability of the average investor to compete.
The Democrats also called for reform in terms of taking tax breaks and then exporting the jobs to other countries. And so there's not only is it increased tax on the wealthy, but it's to close a lot of tax loopholes, particularly tax loopholes that affect American workers in terms of their income or the number of jobs and stuff.
You don't think people like Trump and Romney should be able to park their incomes offshore and avoid paying taxes on them for millions of dollars? You don't think that's fair?
The United States has been pretty good at closing a lot of those simply by pressuring the countries where assets are hidden. But there's a long, long, long way to go. In other words, the United States is so large when it says to a little island nation that's hiding the money of the wealthy, which is another issue we should talk about sometime. When they start pressuring the country, they can open the system up. Even Switzerland has been under pressure.
We should try pressuring our states because we have three states that allow these shell corporations let the wealthy hide their incomes and avoid paying taxes.
There's a whole lack of transparency into who's who and what's what.
Well, as important as all this is, the what we're really talking about is the ability of the wealthy and the politicians and the lobbyists to have fooled and continually to fool. I have these conversations all the time online that somehow $15 an hour minimum wage, we need to go back to that and finish that discussion.
Let's start talking
$15 an hour minimum wage is somehow going to bankrupt businesses and it's going to cause less jobs. There is nothing better for the economy. The economy gets better almost overnight. If the minimum wage, you had people on this show. We had Chuck Vicani on this show that said, well, the minimum wage was never meant to be, it was
a minimum wage.
A minimum wage. And that was fine in his day. Chuck is in his 70s and it was fine for all you old bastards out there. But now what you got are people living. You got single moms. You got families, especially here in Sedona. You got people living six and seven to a house. They are living on the minimum wage, and it's still $7.25 in this state. What's wrong. The economy gets better overnight. Everybody's economy, even the rich guy's economy, the cars, the apartments, the grocery stores, everything gets better when the minimum wage goes up, especially to $15.
The argument always is when you want to increase the minimum wage is it's going to cut jobs.
Nobody loses a job.
And that's always the argument, and that's been the argument for the last 40 years.
And it's a lie. It's a lie.
Okay. But that's the argument, and that's the basis of a lot of the thing. The argument for the minimum wage is simply this. Look, if people have more money, they will spend more money. The government
as
will have more money.
As opposed to the guys
money.
You just talked about that send it overseas. These people will spend it because they have to. They're going to buy a TV because they're tired of looking at that thing with tubes in it.
So it is a complex economic argument, but almost all economists now, or the vast majority of economists, think that increasing the minimum wage has some negatives. Everything we do has some negatives, but that the positives of doing so far outweigh it, that it'll actually generate a lot of energy into the economy.
It's not that complex. As Mike says, if somebody working at McDonald's or, you know, some other fast food place is making $7.50 an hour and they suddenly get a raise, you know, let's say they took them
won't the employers, the conservative argument is the employers will then cut the number of people employed and the unemployment will go up.
The real argument is that they'll raise prices. That's a more real argument.
The employers are, yeah, I mean, when you get down to it, when you raise a minimum wage, you know, you're talking about pennies for the employers to increase the product or the service. It's really minimal. There are some businesses that will suffer, but the other thing is, imagine somebody working for the national minimum wage, which many people are, in New York City, in San Francisco, in Los Angeles,
Cottonwood,
Cottonwood's cheap.
$900,000 a month for as rents in Cottonwood.
But imagine trying to make a living and survive in a big city.
Yeah.
Where the cost of living is, you know, 10 times what it is in Cottonwood. It's just, there are people trying to do that.
Yes, sir.
So one of the big divides is that Democrats think that overall, and I think most economists agree with them, that increasing the minimum wage will not only benefit the people who get the increase in their money, but will increase the economy together. What's happened in the last 40 years is a kind of stagnation of real wages. And it's gotten very bad. And, you know, frankly, I would say, and I know that no other sort of liberals are going to say it, but as long as working folks buy into the idea that the more money you have and leave the wealthy, the less taxes the wealthy and the corporations pay, the better everything is going to be. As long as people buy into that big story.
Lie.
It's almost impossible for Democrats to help people. So when we look at Trump voters, two things are stopping reform in the country. One is too much racial tribalism in identity politics, too much racial resentment, particularly by the white majority. And the other is this huge belief that taxation of the wealthy is a bad thing. When you can show, you can demonstrate, if you go back, that the highest growth rates in the country's history have been in periods of high taxation. But as long as millions of people buy into that and buy into these highly funded explanations by the far right, then it's really hard. I'll tell you, frankly, it's hard if you're not going to begin to take a look at that. It's really hard for people who are liberal or progressive or democratic to help.
Can I put this into perspective? I think one way of looking at it is when Obamacare was being put in place, the owner of and founder of Papa John's came out, against it, fought tooth and nail against it.
I remember
He didn't want to give health care benefits to his employees.
You're going
to
lay everybody off, right,
but,
Gary?
But they looked into it, what the cost to the customer, if he gave all of his employees health care coverage, the cost to the customer was like something like 9 cents per pizza. And the same is true with minimum wage. You know,
Are you going to fire all his employees and close down his business, Gary?
No, but can you imagine that are you going to stop buying a pizza if they raise the price of a dime? He could have raised the price a dime, given all of his employees, health care, and made the extra penny per pizza for himself. You know, it's this whole argument is all based on trickle down economics, which I think is better described as horse and sparrow. That's been around since the mid 1800s, and it's never been proven to work. Ever.
But you as know, long they, as people believe it, it's a problem.
Well,
right?
That's it. I mean, they're laughing at us. This is why I believe we're treated this way. In other words, we're not represented by our representatives. We have this corporate ownership of government through lobbyists, and we government does what corporations want because they're laughing at us. They think we're so stupid to believe these things. You know, all I got to do is be Roger Ailes or Rupert Murdoch and have Fox News or Sinclair and have that East Coast news conglomerate. And I tell people what I want them to believe, no matter what kind of lie it is, and they believe it rather than find out for themselves. They believe that somehow $15 having more money will not improve the economy. They believe that they shouldn't organize into a union because somehow unions are bad because they did do bad things 40 years ago.
If I can make another point, conservatives are always, you know, touting these few anecdotal incidents of somebody abusing food stamps or some other form of public assistance. In reality, that form of public assistance is one of the best subsidies to corporations.
Yep.
Because it shouldn't be viewed as a subsidy to the poor, the working poor who are trying their best to make a living. It's really more of a subsidy for the corporations that refuse to pay these people a living wage, because the money that goes into food stamps goes directly into the economy.
Corporations are no longer providing pensions. They're no longer providing a living wage. And so a whole lot of it is government subsidy. The famous issue, right, is to Walmart.
$900,000 per store that just in subsidies to open the store.
That's a deep problem. Mike, what's your take on this?
We made the Waltons rich through government money. But that's the American way. And people saw that. People saw the Waltons getting rich because they didn't have to pay a living wage. They didn't have to cover health care. So they wanted to get at the government money, too.
So why don't people at Walmart organize and demand a living wage?
They get fired
from your
when they
mouth
try.
To God's ear. I don't know why.
They get fired.
Well, that's why.
But an awful lot of people don't believe in unions.
And then NLRB, we were having this discussion before the National Labor Relations Board, which is now advertising, by the way. You know, they took some money to say, hey, there is a such thing as the National Labor Relations Board, and you are not at the mercy of your whacked-out boss. And please bring us cases. Now, but they have had their the wings clipped a little bit over the years. The Republicans have not. But you can still have the NLRB bring cases on your behalf. So that would be, especially
it's
and being fired unjustly is one of those cases.
You've got to get the card signed to call the people in who will protect you, the feds who will protect you from getting fired. If you don't get the cards in, if you don't have a strong enough group to start with, they can fire people while you're organizing. And one of the union elections I was in, once we called in the labor board, they couldn't touch us. They didn't do anything to us. Nobody was fired. Nobody was mistreated. Nobody got weird assignments on bad hours, any of that. They didn't do anything. Unfortunately, we lost the unionizing vote by one vote. One vote. And within 6-8 months, everybody who was pro-union was fired for one legitimate reason or another. They found some. So the protection from the labor board is, you know, they don't go back over and find out what happens when you lose an election.
We're talking
they
about
only protect you while you're in the midst of counting the cards and holding a vote.
We're talking about a couple of things in the Democratic platform. We're talking about workers' rights, and we're talking about $15 an hour minimum wage. There's lots and lots of things. And we're trying this morning, here it is 20 minutes into the show, to talk about positive policies rather than just Trump is a jerk and Trump is a jerk and Trump, oh, by the way, is a jerk.
And a $15 minimum wage
jerk. So we're trying to talk about those positive things that are in the Democratic platform that really would change the country and change your life and move the country forward. $15 an hour minimum wage is one of them. Financial transaction tax, a half a cent per trade. By the way, we didn't get that out. A half a percent per trade, they would we talked about it. We're talking about workers' rights. But going back to the financial transaction tax to finish that discussion, a half a cent per trade, 0.05. We could do 0.025. We can do a quarter of a percent. But a half a cent per trade would raise $147 billion in the first year, according to the National Nurses Network, enough to pay everybody's health care in the United States and still have plenty left over to make at least community colleges free. Maybe you can't get a four-year degree for free, but, boy, you sure can get community college free with a simple financial transaction. Let me say again how simple this is. We supposedly do 45 minutes on this show so we can explain things. So let's explain things really clearly. A half a cent on Wall Street trades changes American life forever and for the better. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I was just going to go back to one of the big emphases in the Democratic platform is workers' rights. Another is increasing the minimum wage. And there's a lot of other things in there. That's about 50 plus pages. One of the things that they also mention, and this comes from the Bernie Sanders campaign talking to the other Democrats, is expanding Social Security and making Social Security stronger. And I think that we would all agree that one of the big failures now is not only do you not get paid enough when you work, but there's no good pensions anymore. And so people are living on Social Security. Mike did a calculation
before
the show.
I'm doing the math for you. I can do it in my head because I don't need to look this one up. If you're making the minimum in Social Security, if you're making $800 a month, and once again, a conservative would say Social Security was never meant to be all of your income. It was meant to supplement your pension. It was meant to supplement your savings.
They never want to give theirs back. They never want to deny taking their own.
That's right. But if you're paying Medicare out of your Social Security, which you are, that's $110 to $130 a month. If you're paying, then that's just for medical. If you're by getting your prescriptions from Medicare, that's $90 a month out of your Social Security. And if you buy a supplement so you don't have to pay this is where Medicare really needs to be expanded, so you don't have to pay the deductible. Heart procedure over at VVMC cost anywhere between $30,000 and $130,000. You try paying 20% of that out of your. So the point is this: $130 a month for Medicare, $90 a month for prescriptions, $150 a month now is what they charge me for my Medicare supplement. Right away, if I was making $800 a month Social Security, I'm making half. I'm living on $400 a month. Now you go buy groceries. Now you go buy rent on $400 a month. Yeah, no. Social Security needs to be expanded.
So no Democratic
yesterday
platform in recent memory.
If you want old people to live in dignity.
And no political party has advocated, instead of preserving Social Security, instead of this rear guard action to try to prevent these very destructive plans to privatize Social Security.
Republican platform.
Which is in the Republican platform. Instead of that, there's talk of actually expanding Social Security so that the safety net is stronger in this country and more clearly resembles the kind of powerful safety nets that are in European countries and would be a larger supplement to your retirement than savings and often little or no pensions. And I don't have the statistics in front of me, but the amount of savings that the average person has, what, Gary, is it? It's $600 or something.
There's half the people have none.
Yeah. So it's very important to consider this. The I don't know what the Democrats plan to do about worker rights. It's certainly all through the platform about the need for worker rights and to protect unionization and all that. I don't know what you can do given the changes in the way the economy works.
Well, what I think is interesting, when you compare the two platforms, the Republican and the Democrat, and polls show this, too, that there's not that much difference. If you get to the issues, there's not that much difference in the people that support either the Republicans or the Democrats and what they want. They want to, maintain Social Security and Medicare and strengthen them, and the differences gets in how you go about it. But if you look at the similarities, both call for changing the banking system. The Republicans' platform, on one hand, wants to take away all they want to deregulate it. They want to go back to the pre-2008
infrastructure. Why would they want to do that, Gary? Since the pre-2008 lack of rules is what caused the crash, why do they want to go back to that?
Your guess is as good as mine. But it's,
anti-regulation is a very popular stance. I don't believe it is. And once again, this is all theater. Someday we'll have that discussion, psychology and theater as applied to American politics. But anti-regulation is probably one of the most popular part of the platform they have.
And one of the most misunderstood things, too.
Absolutely.
But if you look at it, both parties want to deal with the banking, in some fashion. Both platforms call for renegotiating and looking at our trade agreements. What's interesting to me on that level, they all both talk about bringing manufacturing back. But if you look at how manufacturing is done today, except for in a few industries like the textile industries, it's automated. The auto manufacturer, the auto plant of 40 years ago no longer exists. It's all done, the greatest portion of it's done by robots. So it's not so much that the manufacturing jobs, a lot of them went overseas, a lot of them have come back, but the real problem is technology is changing the way our products are made.
We've been trying to find a speaker to talk to us about what's happening with artificial intelligence and automation, because I think, as Gary is saying, even if you brought all the factories back, they were producing the same number of widgets or whatever it was, the number of people in the factory might be one-tenth of what they once were.
Well, and other governments, those socialist governments, have done retraining programs. They took a look at all those people that were putting together those cars that aren't there anymore. They said, what do you want to do? These are the things we need. Well, we need more school psychologists. We need more healthcare workers. We'll train you to be one of those things. And guess what? People in England and in Denmark and in Sweden took the training and became those
things. When it comes to jobs, you have to look at the very large gorilla in the room, and that's infrastructure. Those are the jobs.
Oh, the crumbling bridges?
Our infrastructure has been given by the Civil Engineering Society has been given a D. That's D as in dog.
So I guess what Democrats are saying, right, is to invest in the country and invest in infrastructure.
Well, both parties are saying that in their platforms. The difference is Democrats have tried to do that over the last 8 years, and the Republicans have voted against or actually blocked bills, trying to fund the reconstruction of our infrastructure. They've actually blocked them, yet they're calling for rebuilding the infrastructure. It's okay if they're in charge, but not if the Democrats are in charge.
I noticed that Paul Krugman, looking at all the evidence today in the New York Times, he's a Nobel-winning economist, said that the country really has to show some gumption and borrow the money. Not only increase taxes on the wealthy and on some of this corporate exportation of jobs, but the country has to have the gumption to borrow money. The rate now on a 30-year bond, I think, is less than, it's almost 0.5%. So his point is that if you wanted to invest in infrastructure, which should provide a return, better roads, bridges, railroads, everything should provide a return on the dollar just straight up.
They can't outsource those jobs.
Right. They can't outsource the jobs. And this is the cheapest money we're going to see in a very long time. So when money is cheap, it makes sense to borrow it and use it and invest in the country. So there's going to be, I think, a big battle. I mean, particularly if the Democrats win this election, there's going to be a big fight about increasing the infrastructure. And we'll do programs on it because it is a major issue. Right, Mike?
Well, yes and no. I'm going to go back to winning the election. Hillary's coattails will be so broad that we'll get the House. There will be no fight because you'll have three Democratic branches of government. You will see this will be what has I heard Will Smith on TV the other day. What has one of the darkest ages of America right now, both racially and politically, will become one of the brightest. There'll be the golden age of America for the next, you know. I know that's
heard
sound.
It first here,
heard
folks,
it right
on
here.
August 8th.
That's right. That's right.
That's right. 2016 at 8:47 in the morning.
There we are.
Mike Cosentino's prediction of a Democratic sweep of everything.
There's an interesting poll out yesterday. I forget who put it out. It looked at the candidates in the voting plans of people under 30, voters under 30. And in that poll, Trump came in number 4.
Yeah.
His polling was the equivalent of undecided. It ranked Hillary and then the Green Party candidate, and then the Libertarian candidate, then Trump, and Trump was the equivalent of undecided.
We got through 32 minutes without mentioning Donald Trump, so I think that's a record for any show of
the great Trumpkin
of this nature. Because he is so pervasive in American politics, and he is that because he understands one thing. Talking about policy, nobody listens to shows about policy. All you need is to start arguments. All you need is to be ugly and negative, and you will get all of the coverage that there ever was. So we could say terrible things about capitalism on this show, and maybe we could become Trump on the left. But anyway, we want to talk. We talked about
Social Security.
Positive policies that will come out of a Democratic administration and a Democratic Congress that are found in the Democratic platform. All of these things about the way life used to be. You want America back? You want America great again? Elect Democrats because that's what it used to be. That's when college didn't cost $150,000. That's when we tax rich people at a rate that we should. That's when we had unions. 40% of people were members of a union when we grew up, not less than 10% or 8% as it is now.
One other big difference between the two-party platforms I want to get in here before we run out of time is the Republican platform denies human-caused climate change and calls for increased fossil fuel production. They want the U.S. to become the world's leading exporter of fossil fuels, coal and oil.
And where do these guys come from?
And
they come from the money coming to the Republican Party is from the extraction industries. In other words, it's from the oil industries. It's from the coal industries. A lot of their money comes from these older industrial sources rather than the newer industrial sources.
It goes
the
out
back of the economy rather than the front end of it.
The platform goes out of its way to attack the Obama administration for its animus towards oil and fossil fuels, even though our oil production is at an all-time high. But worse it pronounces coal clean energy.
That's
and
like,
so it wants to go back and increase coal use.
This is and it's a lie. It's black as white. This is Norfolk, Virginia. I don't know how many tens of thousands of Americans make their living at the Navy Yard and the ports in Norfolk, Virginia. These guys are preparing because it's happening every day. The sea is rising. They are preparing for the rising seas due to climate change.
Did you see the opening ceremony of the Olympics?
I did not.
Where Brazil actually made a big deal out of climate change and planned on planting a forest, replanting forest, kind of calling attention to the urgency. The Democratic platform calls for addressing climate change, quote, as a real and urgent threat to our economy, our national security, and our children's health and futures, a statement that is backed up by virtually every organization in the world except for the GOP.
Exactly. Right. It's the GOP.
And why does the GOP not do it? I think it's a lot because their economic base is in there. But there's a lot of not wanting to face the real problems that the United States and the world are going to be encountering. And one of them is climate change.
We'd rather be afraid of Muslims. We'd rather be afraid of Muslims and Mexicans.
Right.
And we'd be afraid of outsiders coming in to, this is nuts.
It's an unfortunate truth, the climate change. In other words, nobody has decided to do it because it's going to be a lot of fun to do it. Climate change has to be faced. It has to be faced long term. It has to be faced systematically, and it has to be faced by almost every nation in the world. And to deny that is to try to deny the problem, to put your head in the sand and pretend that it doesn't exist.
Well, if you want to call it, and the scientists are giving up, and the proponent, the environmentalists, okay, it's fine. You want to call it cyclical? You want to call it part of the Earth's routine? It doesn't matter anymore whether it's man-caused. And don't forget, we fought about that for 5 or 6 years.
Still denying it.
Well, but I'm saying, but it doesn't matter anymore. It's here. The sea is rising. Islands are disappearing.
The Maldives may disappear.
Exactly.
The other thing is, I think that we were talking about earlier, Mike and Gary, is this trickle-down economics that you can painlessly keep cutting taxes on the wealthy, and suddenly the economy will have there'll be more tax money. There'll be economic growth. It hasn't worked. We need to invest in the economy, as I think the Democratic platform suggests, in a dozen different ways, in order to get the economy back functioning at the level. I think the growth rate's around 2.4%, and it's down from the historic highs, not just in the United States, but worldwide.
Our economy is far better than any other advanced nation in the world.
I know, but it's still not where it should be. And I think what you're going to have to do is be brave, borrow the money, don't fritter it away, but invested in things that will increase the wealth of the United States.
One of the differences that gets at that point is the Republicans' platform is in they're going to make their big economic announcement, policy announcement today, but their platform calls for the fair tax, the so-called fair tax or flat tax, which has been so discredited, it even at 20% would create billions of dollars in debt, add more and more to the debt, and create no jobs, but it would result in an enormous tax break for the top 1% of Americans.
I just don't know how many times you can go back over and over again and cut taxes on the rich and claim that that's going to increase everybody else's prosperity. It's just not true. If you keep doing it, it's what is that phrase, Gary, Mike? If you keep doing the same thing over again that didn't work.
It's called insanity.
It's the definition of insanity.
The definition of insanity. Should we talk about criminal justice reform, Gary?
Sure. Like, about one more thing before we finish, and that is one more worker's right, and it's child care as a worker's right. All nation. We need to do a whole show on just children's issues in this economy and in this country. We're talking about a place where the Clintons cut welfare in the late 90s, and 70% of those people were children. And we're seeing, as far as I'm concerned, the fruition of that today because they're all, you know, obviously had very lacks of protein, and they're Trump supporters because they can't think.
For someone working at a minimum wage to pay for child care while they're working, they actually lose money by working 40 hours a week.
Exactly. So child care as a worker's right is one of those things that are also within the Democratic platform.
And it's in the Democratic platform.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a no-brainer. I don't know. This should be bipartisan. How this is not bipartisan, I have no idea. It takes care of so much, so many things.
There's some other odd things in the Democratic platform, folks. One is a whole section on revitalizing our nation's postal service, breaking some of these crazy rules that have been, put into effect really to hurt the postal service.
Of course.
The primary rule that's destroying it is a rule passed by the Republican-led Congress some time ago. It was back during the Bush administration, where it calls for the post office for setting aside money for all of its employers' retirements going forward, to pay for the retirement of people they haven't even hired yet.
Right.
And no other business on the planet could make a profit, faced with that kind of a regulation.
So we talk about criminal justice reform. It's in both parties' platforms, right, Gary?
Mm-hmm.
We've been talking about economic issues, but criminal justice reform, I think, is another important issue. We've got 3 minutes, Gary, so you have 2.5 minutes.
In a nutshell, we have by far the highest incarceration rate in the world. We have the most people incarcerated in the world, even though our population is dramatically smaller than nations
we've
like
done
China.
We've done 3 shows on mass incarceration. It is a big and real thing.
And here. So we have people rotting away in prison, many of them in solitary confinement for nonviolent offenses.
Also, we've got private prisons, and the Democratic platform would ban private prisons. We've done several shows on that, right?
We're using our prison system and law enforcement as our mental health care system.
Slave labor.
And slave labor, yes. And so the platform calls for a variety of reforms, and it also calls for abolishing the death penalty, which would put us in line with virtually every advanced nation on the planet.
So, Mike, last thing?
Well, yes, absolutely. We only talked about American things. We haven't even talked about what Mike, would socialist things. We're talking like wage insurance or like free early childhood education and nutrition. All right, we want to talk a little bit about Democrats of the Red Rocks, and we want to talk about Ledbetter Law, although we often think he would rather we leave him out. These are reasons why we're on the air. Sedona City Council, Thursday, 8:18. Oh, the forum. Yes, we want local politics is also really important.
There's one candidate that I would urge people.
There is a candidate
who's a close personal friend,
Jessica Williamson,
which is my wife,
is worthy of your vote. Full disclosure, yeah, she's some distant relative.
I'm slightly prejudiced, folks, but I think she's been a great council person.
What's going on at the Posse Grounds on the
18th? That's a picnic, the annual picnic for
Gordon. The Democratic, but we're doing a picnic this year. I mean, a picnic in town. We usually go out of town. 11 to 3, Sunday. That's a Sunday. That's 9/18, September 18th, at the Posse Grounds Park. Come on by. Leave your gun home and come and chat politics with us. And we can talk about the Democratic platform. What's this other thing? Something about marijuana?
I suspect they'll have all the Democratic candidates there for the picnic, folks.
The other thing is the September 15th breakfast on regulations of marijuana.
Okay. Oh, there you go.
Thank you for being with us, folks.
VVID.org is where you find podcasts.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.